Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is a terrible cold open, but I just reached across my tee and I'm wearing an hoodie and I trailed my hoodie sleeve into the tee accidentally.
I'm wearing one as well. Would you like me to dunk it in a hot drink?
It's absorbed so much tea, it's quite frightening.
That is an unpleasant cold open.
Welcome, listener, to this, the Electronic Wireless Show, Rock, Paper, Shotgun's PC Gaming Podcast, and the only podcast you need, in my opinion, which is that of Alice Bell. And I'm joined this week by James Archer. Hello, Jam.
Hello.
And Nate Crowley. Hello, Nate.
That was me pretending was to play a Carnix, an ancient British war horn Celtic, I think.
Oh, okay. Where did that come from?
The primeval mists of ancient Britain. Just thought I'd add a bit of druidic flair.
Oh, lovely. Thank you. I wasn't expecting that. I thought it sounded like a horse.
Well, funnily enough, they were carved to look like horses.
Well,
or beasts.
Isn't that
in
some
general?
Lovely synergy? Yeah. What have we been up to, lads? Anything interesting this week? No, me either.
No. I went to the zoo. Went to Dudley Zoo.
Oh, when are you not at Dudley Zoo?
But I ate an entire multi-pack of Monster Munch at Dudley Zoo.
This is a multi-pack?
Well, yeah, because we thought when it happened that this was like an excessive feat of gluttony, but then we did a count and a bag of Monster Munch now contains 8 monster nodules. So, in fact, it's just a feat of overpackaging, really.
Like, listen, that's why I don't fuck with anything smaller than a grab bag, you know?
Well, this is it, yeah. I just kind of... I felt bad, but not for the reasons I thought I felt bad. Because, 12 bags of Monster Munch isn't that much food, but it's a lot of bags.
Yes.
Had most of them in front of the owls. Can recommend.
I mean, I would say 12 bags of Monster Munch if it's 8 in a bag. That's still, 96 Monster Munch?
I shared some.
With the owls.
But
yeah, psychically.
Throwing Monster Munch, yeah.
This one's for you, I would say, and then grind them under my heel, because it's bad for the digestive system, but I respect them.
And I know this is true, not necessarily that last part, but Nate did just text me out of nowhere saying, when's the last time you had a Monster Munch? And now I know why.
I've broken up with it now. I figured it was a bit of a holiday romance, but it was good. This has all happened since the last podcast.
What dreams may come, eh? Oh, dear. We're not talking about a Monster Munch this week. I thought this was episode 13, unlucky for some, but it's episode 12.
Oh.
Also unlucky for some, presumably. I don't know.
The Butcher's podcast. No, wait, that is the
Baker's.
A Butcher's Dozen.
Oh, I know it is.
Yeah.
A Butcher's Dozen.
When you get, it's like 13 chipolatas.
What?
That sounds like a wicked war film, actually. The Butcher's Dozen.
The Butcher's Dozen, yeah. That's a good name for a crime book.
It'd be 14 Jason Stathams eat at Armed with a Cleaver.
I'm going to look up Butcher podcast now. I wonder if there's like a... Like a...
It's Beef and Dairy Network. That's a podcast, isn't it? The really funny one.
There's a Butcher Barbecue podcast helps you get ahead of the curve on learning for any grill lover. 45 best meat podcasts you must follow in 2024.
45? Imagine having like the obsessive, like the bear level dedication, like that you would like follow 45 meat podcasts. Would you actually, if they were each an hour long and they were weekly, how much time would that leave you to sleep and live?
I thought this would... There are loads of butcher podcasts.
For
the
real?
Bearded Butchers. Once a week, Scott and Seth Perkins, aka the Bearded Butchers, come to you live from Creston, Ohio with news and updates about grilling, hunting, and of course, Meatgistics podcast, from animal to edible, Beef Brunch educational series, the Swine It podcast show. What is this?
Beef Brunch Australian sounds like the demolition guild. Expert in the Butcher's Dozen. Oh, Beef Brunch. I'm also Jason Statham, but with a slightly lower voice.
Are they led by Danny Butcher?
No, Chicken Dinner.
We're gonna rob this pork farm.
This is like machine written Guy Ritchie.
A heist film called Butcher's Dozen about stealing sausages from a pork farm is like an AI future film we have predicted when they don't hire writers or actors anymore.
You know, I had that idea for a movie. You remember the movie Yesterday, when no one knows who the Beatles are?
Yes.
And I thought it'd be really fun to do that, but with Jason Statham. He's the only guy who remembers what sausages are, and he keeps getting laughed at butchers because like, no one wants a condom full of mints. And this would be the sequel to that.
Anyway, I can't think of any way to segue about this, because obviously this isn't a meat-themed podcast. We're actually here to talk about...
The Meat Grinder of Malevolon Creek.
Hey.
Yeah, there you go. Well done. We're talking about Helldivers. Let's talk about Joel, baby. Let's talk about you and me.
Let's talk about lots of robots having battles. Can't you see?
Very good. I was trying to cram insects in there. So Helldivers 2. I thought we haven't talked about Joel yet. And I thought it might be an opportune time to do so because there's been some Joel stuff happening this week. But first, okay, people might not know who Joel is. So instead, let's start at the very beginning, which is a very good place to start. James, can you sort of explain to listeners who may be unaware the sort of Helldivers 2 battle system, the big battle map that goes on?
Yeah, sure. So in Helldivers 2, the way you start missions is you have this galactic map, a bit like the one in Mass Effect, I guess. Each planet is like organized into zones, and the more players choose to land on certain planets and then win missions on those planets, they kind of gradually liberate that star system from either the bugs or the robots, depending on which side of the map it is. And Joel is kind of like the games master of Helldivers 2. So he can determine, I guess, the degree to which certain areas are like under bug or robot control. He can start events where like a previously liberated system gets invaded again, something like that. And apparently he can like actually enter individual games and, I don't know, screw around with individual players, spawning bosses or a wave of bugs or something, or giving people free airstrikes, I guess. So he's kind of like the god of Helldivers 2.
Can nice I just say, so this was... I love the shit out of this.
Well, I'll put a pin in how much you love it, because we should briefly explain a tiny bit more some of the context for this. It was revealed almost exactly a month ago, an interview with the I want to say CEO, yeah, John Pilstead, who was interviewed by PC Gamer, and he said, we have an actual person with the job title of Game Master. His name is Joel, and according to PC Gamer, he takes his job very seriously. We have a lot of systems built in the game where the Game Master has a lot of control of the play experience. It's something we're continuously evolving based on what happens in the game. And as part of the roadmap, there are things we want to keep secret because we want to surprise and delight. It's, apparently there have been instances where, like, Joel has had to, like, get up in the middle of the night and, like, you know, deal, like, throw more robots, basically, at, like, a planet. And it's, there have been sudden moments where maybe one planet was too easy and one was too hard, and Joel had to get up in the middle of the night to give the automatons a bit of reinforcement so the players didn't take the planet too quickly. There have been other moments of improvisation after the community managed to liberate the first batch of Terminid planets faster than Arrow had anticipated. There was an unplanned day of nothing happening before the automaton invasion was to begin. So Joel, in his infinite wisdom, decided what happens when a faction wins a portion of a war? Well, they mine everything. And that's where the incendiary mine segment came from, which was a 24-hour period where the incendiary mine strategy was available for free on all missions. So he's doing a lot of work on the fly, and when this was revealed, Joel became a kind of a mimetic god king as well. So if you search on, like, the Helldivers Reddit, there's a lot of references.
Praise be to Joel,
Joel,
god of war.
Yeah, praise be to Joel. If something goes wrong, someone will be like, Joel, please. When they see stuff sort of gearing up, people will be like, is Joel preparing something? So it's become a real moment, you know. I think it's quite interesting. I also think I should say as well that someone spotted that Arrowhead is hiring, it looks like, for a new game master, presumably so Joel can sleep and take holiday.
A co-Joel.
Yeah,
but I think
Joel, there can only be two.
To be a little more articulate than I love the shit out of this, I think it's a wonderfully well-timed story, and I wonder how much the timing's, you know, accidental and how much, you know, there's just a genuine appetite for this at the moment, because it seems when every single week we're discussing something or other being automated in a shit way, like, this is such an analog move. And to look at it from a business perspective, for, you know, the cost of one person's salary, the amount of interest they've generated, the amount of interesting things the game can do, because there is a human being employed to fuck with it around the clock. creating a lot of player surprise for a relatively small amount of investment. And, well, I think they were better off spending the money on Joel than with some other weird AI thing. It's lovely.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because it's, on a smaller scale, this has been done successfully with AI, like in Left 4 Dead 2, which famously had a sort of very flexible, reactive kind of, I can't remember what they called it now, something like Game Master, I should
know. That was
but
in,
if you were doing...
That was in Left 4 Dead 1 as well, the AI director.
The director, that's it. Was it in 1 as well?
Yeah.
But if you were doing too well, more zombies would happen, kind of thing. But yeah, I think it's super interesting. And I did want to ask you, Nate, about, because you've played a lot of tabletop games and you've been a sort of game master and participated in events like this. How do you think it sort of scales?
So I think it works really well here because it's being done on such a macro scale. Because if you look at things like throwing, as you say, a bunch of robots at a planet because it's being taken too easily, I do not pretend to know anything about the process involved, so this may be hugely misinformed, but it feels like a relatively small change to make to the game. You know, it's essentially changing a variable, and that can have a huge impact narratively because of the scale it's on, because that's, you know, just changing the enemy presence on a planet is going to change the experience dramatically for thousands and thousands of players. So I think, you know, the larger the gods, the bigger the poke they can give. You know, and in an arena like that where, yes, the changing of an integer can change 10,000 people's evening, I think that's a, in terms of bang for your buck, that's a brilliant place to have a games master. Obviously, if you look at a game split into, you know, and Helldivers, of course, is split into instances, sure, but you have that metagame, whereas something, you look at your sort of bog standard team shooter with lobbies, and you couldn't distribute one person's godlike intentions in any sort of efficient way amongst that number of lobbies. So I think this is the perfect use case, but it's not the only one. As you say, it's happened in different ways before. It made me think of, I guess, the examples I can think of previously haven't really been baked in to a game as such. Like, I think about sort of Ultima Online and Lord British. And do you remember all of that?
Vaguely. I didn't realise was Lord British very kind of hands-on in that way?
He got assassinated in the game, and it was fascinating because that was not meant to happen. But someone worked out how to kill him in his own game. And it was like someone had just shanked God. But that was exciting because it was kind of emergent complexity. You know, it was someone who loved his game and wanted to participate in it, and then players who worked with that. And that was a kind of a magic, because that spawned, yeah, and this is years and years after Ultima Online, and I'm talking about it now, so it's literal mythology. But again, that wasn't baked into the game, I wouldn't say, in the same way that this is, where it's an ongoing mechanic. Which does beg the question, imagine if they put Joel into the game as an entity, someone would find a way to kill him.
Obviously they would, yeah. I think, I don't know, because I haven't played it. James, did your kind of understanding of the game change once you knew that a man was doing it?
I think I came to it slightly late, so by the time I started playing it, like, I think Joel was kind of widely known.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I don't know. Like, I guess it's often like an invisible hand situation where you don't really, feel directly the influence of this dude. Not that I expect him to have like actually been into one of my specific games. Just like, the chance of that happening are vanishingly low, but
that's the thing, you could never know, could you?
Yeah,
you could never know for sure.
Fake Joels have started popping up, and they tend to be like, yeah, very like, hello, it's me, Joel, the real Joel from Arrowhead Games. I'm here to do Joel things, and I suspect the real Joel doesn't do that.
Well, we were able to confer, because I was going to say a fascinating thing is that, pretending to be Joel conveys some level of clout, I guess, because we did write about a player, you know, being Joel and like spawning in a big like APC, I think, and we were contacted by a Joel source with first-hand knowledge who did confirm that, you know, that was not Joel. And Joel does not do that. I think it's because, I think what it is, James, you kind of alluded to, is like, probably, no, you know, they weren't really going to reveal, in normal circumstances, you don't know the name of the person sort of doing this kind of stuff behind the scenes. And now people do. And it's funny how quickly it became a kind of mimetic thing. And that how quickly the community sort of made it a thing.
Discovered Joel through watching YouTube shorts on Helldivers, because I haven't like played the game, but I've been following it since it came out via, and like YouTube Shorts is quite good for it because they're like little war bulletins. And it's interesting watching the progress of it. And a couple of weeks ago, yeah, they all just went mental. I started to say, there's a man, he's called Joel. This is what he's doing. It was like a genuine plot twist.
I think as well, it's quite totemic rather than literal, because yeah, I don't think anyone seriously thinks that, you know, Joel the man, because they made him like an acronym, like J-O-E-L in game. But I don't think anyone really thinks that he is actually trying to destroy, like win the war, right? Because if he did that, the game's over. So, like, it's trying to make it like an actual challenge. But I do just think it's fascinating that, like, yeah, they're obviously these players who you know, have been using hacks to be able to spawn stuff, or whatever, think that they're, you know, it is worthwhile to pretend to be Joel in some sense.
Mm.
Oh, it's crazy. Are there any games that you think could benefit from a Joel-like, you know, games master that don't have them, as far as we know?
You see, again, it's tough to think of games where there is a persistent metagame, you know, that is volatile enough to make something like this workable.
Hmm. It's quite an edge case, I suppose, isn't it? In many senses.
I mean,
would you like this job, Nate?
Oh, yes. 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 It's reactive, it's chaotic, it never stops. Like, yeah, I think I might actually be quite functional in something like that. Looks very
would
good.
Would you like it, James?
Well, I was actually reading the job description. And I was surprised to read that it requires a minimum 5 years of game design experience. So I guess that means it's not just a case of, you know, sitting at a desk, sometimes pressing the spawn boss button, sometimes pressing the give free artillery strike button. Like, you actually do need to, yeah, like I guess like Nate said, like a good understanding of metagames and directing thousands of people at a time. It's like,
yeah,
like that makes sense. Yeah, it is a game design job rather than, you know, a narrative job or a.
And to qualify my enthusiasm, yeah, it sounds absolutely grueling and exhausting, and yeah, but I mean, that doesn't stop it sounding amazing.
Yeah, I think. I would not like it because I would feel a tremendous amount of pressure to not fuck it up. And also, yeah, like you said, James, I don't think I would have any understanding of like how many percentage points more automatons is too many.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You have to be able to see the butterfly effect.
Exactly, yeah. Like playing chess several moves ahead and reacting to like, yeah, the community doing stuff. I wouldn't be able to do it. It's too much, man.
Yeah, I think it does look extremely improvisational. And I think that's a large part of the appeal. Like, it's, you know, having complex problems to solve that you can't even anticipate until they're in effect. And often as a result of your attempts to solve other problems, I think that's quite thrilling mentally.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I'm the opposite. I'm just like, no.
I just like being in the middle of large fires.
You're the dog. You're the everything's fine dog.
Yeah. But he's sincere in my case.
All right. Well, Godspeed to Joel. I hope they do hire more game masters. It's not just one guy.
Maybe they should hire the guy who got to the center of Peter Molyneux's cube.
Yeah, that's his reward.
He was promised godhood, and I don't think he ever received it.
This thing, Goddess, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goodness me.
He was supposed to be the god of Goddess. Oh,
Goddess,
dear.
The Roman god.
Didn't Molyneux announce he was getting into NFTs or something about 6 years too late?
Yes.
Which is perfect. Oh dear. Maybe this will become a thing. Maybe like game masters in games like this will be Joels now. Like that'll be a job. People say like, oh, I'm the Joel for WoW's new battle royale.
You know? I could see that catching on.
Yeah. Immortalized. I haven't been playing Helldivers, but let's talk about stuff we have been playing this week. James, I suspect you and I have been playing the same game, at least for some of the time.
I suspect we have, which is Horizon Forbidden West. And I think it's fabulous. Yeah. What do you think, Alice?
I think it's fucking great. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, nice.
Oh,
yeah.
How does it compare with the first one? Because I'm having big thinks about playing it, because you know I've been putting off investing in a new PC, and this would probably be the first thing I do with it. So yeah, if it's anywhere near the original in terms of the story, that's definitely on my to-do list. Is it?
You know all the stuff you liked in the first one?
Mm.
It's more of that.
Oh, good.
But like sort of more like, you know, the water is more watery and the plants are more leafier and the stakes are a bit higher and the quests are more noble, you know. I think, I don't know if you agree, James, I think the combat's more fun because they've expanded kind of the arsenal.
Yeah,
and
you definitely have to, I remember when I first played it on PS5 a couple of years ago. I initially thought, oh, they've just made the combat much harder for no reason. But actually, what they've actually done is just make it so that you need to, I guess, use and pay more attention to the different like tools and status ailments you can inflict, rather than just doing what I was doing, which was flinging arrows at the glowing orange bits.
Do you essentially play it as a Sonic the Hedgehog game by just rolling constantly to avoid death?
There is a heavy emphasis on rolling, I think.
Mm.
That's cool.
It is.
I like it. I like how like physical the combat is.
I've actually got love to roll tattooed across my knuckles.
Yeah, and it is the case that like you have to think about your loadout a bit more, I think, and like,
yeah, definitely.
You know, if you're going up against like a giant bear robot that, you know, pisses fire, if you've got an electric weapon of some kind, you can hit the sparkers on its back and that bears down in like, you know, two goes basically. But if you're just kind of hammering away, yeah, I think it's definitely made it more tactical, more fun. It really walks a line between like being difficult and using your skill and stuff, which is really good.
Can you sell me on a couple of the Robutes in it?
Oh, there are loads more robots. There's my least favorite, I should say, are called like, oh, they're called like claw jammers or something. I can't remember, but they're baboons.
Is it claw striders?
I'm thinking the wrong thing. But they're monkeys. They're monkey gorillas. They're baboons, and they fling fire at you instead of their own shit, and they're really difficult. There's a big, it's called a tide ripper, which is basically a big Loch Ness monster. What's your favourite of the new ones, James?
So my favourite robot is the Slaughter Spine, which, according to the wiki, has a design based roughly on an outdated reconstruction of Spinosaurus.
Oh, Jurassic Park 3, baby! Yes!
And yeah, it literally has like a load of spiky plates running down its back and just looks like a proper like menacing
robot. Oh, definitely massive, have a portion of that. Yeah.
It is massive.
It's
as well.
It's this year's Thunderjaw, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost as big as a Thunderjaw.
I really like the shell. It's called a shell snapper, I think, which is basically a big snapping turtle, like a really big one, and its head like snakes out like a snapping turtle.
Oh, I adore snapping turtles. Oh.
Yeah, and they're great because they have loads of vulnerable like electric sparkers, but they're all under the shell, and you have to hit these like yellow sort of like fuse boxes, I guess, on the top, and then they will extrude the vulnerable bits. It's great.
Oh, the mammoth as well. Oh, I love the mammoth.
Oh yeah, the mammoth. There's a fucking, do you know in Lord of the Rings where the evil humans have big mammoths with all drums on the back? there's robot ones of them, and you can shoot the guys off their back, like in Lord of the Rings.
There's guys on them? Oh, no, you can't tell me anymore. This is well, I mean, we can talk more about the game, but don't tell me any more specifically about the guys on the fans. Yeah.
That's spoilers.
I think they have done well. I think they've done better to the extent that I can make that judgment with the designs of the tribes in this one. They're not just sort of like crude allegories for Native Americans. I think they're much more thoughtful and specific to the world and the places they're from. They have very different cultures and societal norms and stuff. There's a group called the Tanakh who base all their decorations and their customs and even where they live on some glitchy like holograms in an edutainment museum about a group called Task Force 10 who were in like an airborne special forces group during a climate-based war years before. And because the holograms were all glitchy and jagged, they do like jagged kind of decorations on all their clothes and stuff. And, you know, one group of the Tanakh just live in the desert in a really hostile, really difficult place to live just because it was like Task Force 10 went to the desert too, you know.
Oh, this sounds so good. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to buy that then.
I did miss, actually. I don't know if you did, James, but I played with the Xbox controller. And I missed the adaptive paddles.
Oh yeah, from like when you're using the bow. Yeah, I'm playing with mouse and keyboard, to be honest.
That's insane, James.
Why is it insane?
Nobody plays a third person action game with a mouse and keyboard.
This guy does. It makes it easier for me to hit the glowing orange bits.
Oh, it makes it harder for me, and you get all like crab hands. No, it's just not as comfortable. And you have to do so many like quick switches and stuff. I just think controller is better.
I will say what Guerrilla did in like mapping the controller buttons is a work of art because translated to keyboard, it just feels like there's about 400 different potential inputs you can do. And yeah, I was rebinding everything and I was literally running out of like realistic finger movements to do all the stuff I wanted. So yeah, like it's well crafted on a gamepad, but I don't know. I'm a mouse person. So
just there, you stunlocked me, my brain, for exactly as long as it took for me to remember that Guerrilla was the name of the developer and spelt with a U and an E.
Oh, not good.
What I thought Guerrilla did that was really clever. Was like,
a very
who's
smart
Guerrilla, bro. Yeah.
The story this time is you're basically finding bits of the AI that is going to restore Earth because it's been split up, and you need to find all the different subordinate functions, and you go, they've all been sort of hiding in computers around the place, and go to Vegas, which is very cool, actually, the Vegas ruins. Technically all of this is New Area, which is to the west of where you were before, but you don't get to the like kind of much trailed cover art ruins of San Francisco until you're about 20 hours in, which is a I think bit burying the lead a little bit, but it is very fun when you get there.
Oh, want to eat the egg?
Yes.
Is it still available on PS4?
I'm pretty sure, isn't it, James?
Was it on PS4? I thought it was just PS5.
Was it PS5 only?
I'll find out. This is a PC games podcast.
Exactly. I don't know about what those fucking Jim Ryan hacks are up to.
Oh.
Yeah. But no, it's very good. Have we been playing anything else, James?
I briefly played Dragon's Dogma 2 for benchmarking purposes, but I don't think I'm the right person to actually hold forth on it.
That's fair. That's very fair. It's more than fair. I've been playing Open Roads, which the review will be out yesterday as you listen to this. It is by Open Roads team, which is a small team of developers from within another studio. There was some drama. I've linked to the drama in the review. It doesn't really matter for the sake of the game. It's a road trip game with a mother and daughter called Opal and Tess. And they discover Opal's mum, so Tess's grandmother, who recently died, may have had an affair like decades before. when Opal was like 10 or no, Opal was like, I want to say like 12. I can't really remember. Set in 2003, they find all this stuff about the affair. So they decide to like go to the old mobile home, which was their summer home when Opal was a kid, to find out more. And then this eventually leads them to Canada. They're trying to track down this guy. They're trying to figure out what's going on. Maybe he was involved with like some treasure that was kind of stolen. So it sort of has hints at being like a kind of thriller mystery, but it's not at all. It's like a very intimate mother-daughter road trip thing. Tess is a teenager and sort of wants more responsibility, and she and her dad, who left and moved to Las Vegas, is like the fun parent that she likes and would like to hang out with more. And you can see it from like Opal's point of view as well, because like, you know, she's like, you know, that had to be the parent, and at the same time, part of the frustration that Tess has is because Opal won't really talk about the divorce and what happened. So it's really, really well done, that aspect of it. It is very short, finished in about 2 hours, but it's very nice, and it's a real nice mix of 3D first person, like detailed kind of realist environments, and then Tess and Opal are these lightly animated 2D illustrations that are really nice. Yeah. So it is a really, really nice little kind of intimate experience if you like that sort of thing. But you might not. It's one of those games where like not a lot actually happens, if you get what I mean. But it's a really nice like character piece, I guess. Like a one-act play, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. I can go for a nice short game.
Yeah. Yeah. Nate, have you been doing your history fights?
I've been playing Broken Toads, which was a much funnier throwaway joke before you gave a beautifully succinct summary of Open Roads. I was going to pretend it was a visual novel where you play the therapist of the Battle Toads. You've got to try and return them to some semblance of mental health. But in reality, yeah, basically more history fights.
Great. James, it feels like a good day to wear hard. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. Because so this week I've been learning about the tactics used by smugglers to transport embargoed PC parts into communist China. So most recently, a man was caught trying to shift 44 AMD Radeon GPUs into the country using the not very imaginative technique of just carrying them through the airport in boxes and hoping no one would notice them, which I don't think is really smuggling. That's kind of just hoping for the best. What he should have done is take inspiration from some of his more creative colleagues in the industry. So, for instance, last year at a port in Macau, a man rode an electric scooter off a boat and onto the mainland, carrying, inside the axle of that scooter, so, like, you know, like the upright where the handlebars are, like a tightly packaged strip comprised of 84 SSDs. And in 2022, a woman was arrested for smuggling 9 iPhones and 202 Intel CPUs inside a fake prosthetic belly. Another man had also tried to sneak in 160 processors by taping them to his body, like to his thighs and stuff. So I like these stories for like comedy value, obviously. Especially when the authorities do the kind of like celebratory photo shoot, you know, like how when the UK police find a stash of cocaine and knives or something, they always release a photo of the hall laid out on the table.
Yeah.
Of someone huffing a load of coke off a knife, yeah.
The Chinese police do that too, except it's a photo of 200 Intel chips and a plastic stomach. but also, it's quite interesting to me that the demand for these parts is so high that they're like considered so valuable that people are willing to go through such lengths to, you know, sneak them through trade restrictions and then have this whole black market on the other side. Like, isn't that odd for something like we all take pretty much for granted?
Yeah,
it reminds me of like denim jeans becoming hot commodities in the Soviet Union, like just because they were banned.
Yeah.
The same energy, yeah.
What do you think would become a hot commodity in the UK if it was banned? Anything? XL bullies.
What I can already tell you, and this is me at my very most Brexit, it's drinks without sweeteners in, Alice.
Oh, shit.
Possible to get, like, Rio fell, like, Pepsi fell. Gosh. Yeah. I nearly spent a lot of money buying a few cartons of cherry juice from Greece before I realised that was a stupid thing to do.
If we were in the smuggling business, how would we get 50 graphics cards past the Chinese Rozzers?
Ooh, can we make that this week's tower, actually? It is now.
I think since you can't really disguise a graphics card as anything else, you just have to discourage the search taking place to begin with. So I'd do what Nick Cage does in Lord of War, which is put them in like a small box right in the middle of a much bigger cargo container filled with rotting potatoes. You're like, oh, the refrigeration broke. Oh, the smell's horrible. And then no one would check.
So I would, like, I'd buy a frozen rat from a pet shop and I would open it up, put all of the SSDs inside in like a laminated pouch. Then I would sew the rat up and feed it to a python, which I would then have sent through customs. It would take it about 2 weeks to dissolve the rat, at which point it should shit out on the other end a laminated envelope of SSDs. With a lot of biological screening to prevent their detection. Because being inside the rat and the snake's rib cage should completely jam them from x-rays as well.
God, you two are like way more imaginative than me. My immediate thought was like, how many can I swallow?
You would be the rat.
Graphics cards, I imagine not many.
I know, right? Less than one.
Oh, graphics cards. Oh, hang on, no, they're very big.
You'd have to feed it to, you'd have to get like a frozen stoat or something.
Yeah.
Oh no, I've drastically misunderstood this, because they're like how big is it? Are they, it's about as big as a phone these days?
Graphics cards?
Yeah.
Oh, Nate. Some of them are like the size of a Converse box.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. They get pretty big these days.
Oh, you must have thought I'd lost my mind talking about rats.
No, I got that you were talking about SSDs. You know, that is also desired commodity.
Well, if it was graphics cards, you could do the same thing with guinea pigs and an anaconda. And in fact, that could gulp down a few in a row. Yeah, one per guinea pig. Wouldn't puncture the snake because of the meat insulation. Yeah, it's actually a better plan.
It might be easier to hide as well, because the snake would be like more consistently thick. It wouldn't have, you know, the comedy bump just like halfway down it.
Yeah, because an anaconda is a very thick snake. And if you were to send it between two zoos, like, no one's going to be like, excuse me, Dudley Zoo, I think there's some hardware in your anaconda. Beg your pardon.
Such a good film. Cracked it. Yeah.
I can't get over the way you said, oh, Nate. It was so pitying.
I try not to be haughty in the hardware section, but
to be fair,
the size of a phone.
Oh, dear. Well done. Thanks. Is there a beans metaphor? We didn't do a bee. We got lost in the rat sauce. What?
I don't know. What's the lesson here that we can?
Well, if the state of California enacted a beansless county,
yeah,
you know, the cowboys would be sitting around eating like Marston soot around the campfire. And I guess anyone... how would they be smuggling the beans in? Like, a few between the foot and the sole of their boot?
You could probably fit a couple of beans inside, like, the empty each empty chamber of their revolvers.
Just imagining.
Why is there tomato sauce coming? Why is there tomato sauce coming out of your six iron, partner?
Betrothed cowboy cracking open a revolver, just pouring this pathetic amount of beans out of the chambers.
That's just about all we've got time for, and thank God once again. For this episode of the Electronic Wireless Show, although exciting news, I completely forgot to mention this, but what it's called, like the Golden something, it's like a painting competition for Warhams. The Golden Demon. Yeah, someone at this year's Golden Demon did a power washing paint.
Yes, it's really good. I meant to show you that. Yeah, with the little Admech and the Dreadnought.
Yeah, it's so good. It's really, really good. I'll try and find some pictures of it. It's not properly attributed anywhere that I've seen it because no one seems to know who painted it, but I'll try and find it out and link to it. It's so good. Really, really great stuff.
Amazing.
I don't know how they did the water blast, but it's really great.
I think they did it via UV cured resin, but I'd have to have a close look.
Oh, because it's anchored on the big fella. It's not coming from the little Admech. Anyway, that was great. Good job to whoever did that. Well done. As we come to the end of this season 3, episode 12, the Electronic Wireless Show, all that is left to do is some recommendations, because every week we recommend something that is not a video game. So James, what are you recommending this week?
I'm recommending Yorkshire Tea Malty Biscuit Brew.
Ooh.
Which, through some kind of tea bag alchemy, produces tea that smells and very subtly tastes of biscuits.
Okay.
So, I don't understand how it works, because the ingredients are just black tea and 3% natural ingredients, whatever that is. But it works. Yeah. It works. It does evoke malty biscuits. And it was very useful last week when I was deathly ill. So,
were you deathly ill last week?
Yeah.
I may be slightly exaggerating, but I was quite ill. I was having like a cold in reverse. So,
oh, a hot.
So
I'm better now.
Thank you.
Your nose was too unstuffed. It was too powerfully clear.
Tried to take a tiny breath and just inflated your chest to full capacity. It's turbo breathing.
That sounds much nicer than what actually happened, which is just coughing.
I would like to recommend the television series Twisted Metal. I had a really slow afternoon, and I thought, you know, because I'm always interested in people doing odd things with IP. And I thought, well, what are they going to make of this? And the answer was about 6.5 hours of, like, competent and compelling action television. It's got, what's her name? Off of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I've forgotten her name.
What character did she play?
The angry, sexy detective.
Oh, she plays Rosa, and she was in the Disney singing one.
Yes.
As well, yeah.
Yes.
Stephanie something.
Stephanie Beatrice.
Well, she's wonderful in it. There's Will Arnett being the voice of a frightening clown man who's way more compelling than he had any right to be. And Anthony Mackie really actually having a personality and being quite pleasant. Yeah, it was fun. Very silly, but, you know, not like insultingly stupid.
There's
some good explosions.
I'm real surprised by that, because I think we all sort of thought it would be shit from the game's opening night, Jeffcon, whatever it was, the clip that was shown, and Will Arnett handheld kind of intro filmed on his iPhone situation.
And I see the magic is I saw none of that. I had never heard of this until last week. And I just thought, well, what the... Yeah, because I remember playing Twisted Metal and I thought, what the hell is this? And went into it with no expectations. And I think that's probably the way to do it by the sound of it.
It does sound like the way to do it, yeah. I am going to recommend, as is my way, a book. It's called The Concert Hall Killer. It's not out yet. And by the way, pre-order my book, please. Thanks. It's out in May. It's called Displeasure Island. This is called The Concert Hall Killer. And it's the third or fourth in a cozy crime mystery series about a retiree and her son-in-law solving little murders. And this one is... it's very cute. A production company is filming in the village and all the pensioners are like hearts on fire. They're all of a flutter and it's a really nice depiction of people, you know, a local small town being super excited when cameras appear, you know, which is really nice. And then someone dies, obviously. But yeah, that was my recommendation.
Why can't someone ever just get poorly, Alice? Why can't they be like getting poorly mysteries?
I know. And a lot of the, like, I've told this before, but when I wrote my book, the first one, has a lot of swearing in it and the bad C word in it as well. And my editor was like, people don't mind really gruesome depictions of, you know, death and murder and people being flayed and blood everywhere and stuff. But they draw the line at some swearing. So she was like, you might get pushback for that. But I was like, listen, that word is very important to me. So.
That's absolutely true. In the same way, you'll notice all Warhammer 40k fiction never gets particularly horny, even though there's a god of being horny.
But then, you know, if you were one of the faction of the god of being horny, it would be a bit of a busman's holiday, isn't it? Maybe you don't really get horny. Do you know what I mean?
Well, genuinely, that's the way it's written around. Well, they're also the god of lots of other things.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Well, thank you, listener, for joining us for this week's episode of the Electronic Wireless Show, Rock, Paper, Shotguns, PC Gaming Podcast, and the only podcast you need, in my opinion. We'll be back next week to talk about something else. If you'd like to contact us with questions, suggestions, or feedback, then you can email us at podcast@rockpapershotgun.com, and you can find Rock Paper Shotgun on all of your favorite and least favorite social medias. Just search for Rock Paper Shotgun. We're probably there. You can also join the Discord to hang out and have a chat. It's got a lot of good chat going on in there. We're always around. The wider Discord has a lot of nice extra stuff like gaming and, you know, finding people to game with and organising stuff, which is great. But for all of your PC gaming needs, just go to www.rockpapershotgun.com. For now, it's goodbye from me, Alice Bell. It is goodbye from Nate and his weird Celtic horn, whatever it was. So weird. It sounds like, that sounded like an F1 car going past. And it's goodbye from James.
Goodbye.
Bye.